Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Thursday morning. We'll have Predators head coach John Hines coming up at 9:30 as the Predators are out west preparing to take on the Anaheim Ducks coming up tomorrow. So looking forward to that coming up at 9:30. Right now, taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Joe Rex Road, live from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, in preparation of Tennessee and Clemson in the Orange Bowl. Joe, Dabo Swinney and Josh Heupel spoke earlier this morning. What did you learn from those two and their conversations that they had?
If this game has anything to do with average words per answer in that press conference, Clemson is going to blow Tennessee out of that stadium tomorrow. I mean, can you just stop talking for a minute, Dabo? Seriously. Like you don't like he just keeps going and going and going.
Wasn't that what you like as somebody that interviews coaches? Some of them don't talk at all.
Yeah, if they say good stuff. And again, don't get me wrong, Dabo. I mean, Dabo is a good quote, but it's like, first of all, like his voice is hoarse too. So it's also like, okay, guys, and then he's just talking and talking and talking, and Heupel gives a quick answer, and then it's back to Dabo. Didn't learn a ton, but, you know, the day before the game press conference is a bowl game tradition.
Yes, it is.
Like you need to go to it. I needed to go to it so I could ask Josh Heupel a question about Joe Milton so I could plug his quote into my 2,000-word – my latest 2,000-word story on Joe Milton. Is obviously in life what I want to be when I grow up is Joe Milton's biographer. I'm hoping he'll let me just kind of join him for the whole journey the rest of his life and just write about it every day.
Me too.
But, yeah, the presser was like most of these pressers day before the bowl game. I mean, there's a whole bunch. Okay, now, and these coaches. So let's have the coaches talk about the great bowl hospitality and the wonderful situation their teams have had this week and blah, 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 you know. And then you get to football stuff. There was some big picture stuff, you know. That was interesting. Dabo loves to talk about the big picture stuff.
Does he?
He loves to complain about players getting paid and players transferring and all these things. But I do agree with Dabo in terms of like the portal. Someone was asked about the COVID years and how those have hurt, you know, high school recruits. And he said, I think the portal is the bigger issue in terms of some kids coming out of high school losing some opportunities. I think both those things are factors, but. You know, certainly, I would agree with him on that one. And they both talked about different aspects of their teams and whatnot. So
Joe,
a big ball. It's very exciting.
I'm sure that it was. So, Joe, I've got two things that I want to read to you that you have written, both of these things, and then we'll get into this discussion. I'm looking at Twitter right now, and it's a link to your article of The Athletic on Joe Milton. And your tweet says, quote, Tennessee backup quarterback for a third straight season, NFL first round pick in 2024. That's the range of possibilities for Joe Milton on the work he's done to be great and the opportunity ahead of him. And I'm looking at our show grid today, and at 9 o'clock it says, Joe Milton, number one overall pick in 2024, We discuss. So what have you uncovered here in your conversations with Joe Milton down in Florida? And let's discuss this piece that you've just come out with at theathletic.com.
Yeah, so, and like, here's a little, you know, making the sausage. I actually did have early in my story, I wrote down number one overall pick, and then I changed it today to first round pick. I can't quite flamethrow the take to that extent. I can't charbroil it that much, okay?
Okay.
I think a lot of people are going to say, 2024 first round pick, hot take, and I get it. Oh, number one overall, I mean, that is, you know, the funny thing about that is, I was going to look this up and I didn't, but if anybody can remember, like at this time going into the 2019 season, like coming off 18 going into 19, what was Joe Burrow projected? I think he was, I don't think Joe Burrow was projected as a first round pick in the 2020 draft. 2019, he comes out, sets the world on fire, and he does it with an offense that's fully loaded at every spot to do that. But still, he was great. Everybody saw it. He's the number one pick, right? That doesn't happen a ton, but it can happen. I think Caleb Williams and Drake May are both, obviously, they're both way ahead of like Joe Milton right now in terms of performance and proving it on the field. Joe Milton has the talent to be the number one overall pick in a given NFL draft. I absolutely believe it. And I don't just believe it with what I've seen. I believe it really more from what people have told me. But at the same time, it is possible he's the backup at Tennessee because he can't do it on game day. I mean, that's why I think Friday is important, but it's also like, I think in the off season, I think it's gonna be really hard for Nico Iamileava or Taven Jackson to approach Joe Milton. Joe Milton blew Hendon Hooker out in the competition too. He blew him out. People have a problem with that. That's what it was. He was way better than Hendon Hooker in the preseason of 2021, and he won the job easily. But then game day, those three-hour, well, in Tennessee's case, four-hour blocks are what ultimately matters. And he has to be able to translate what he does every day, which isn't just throw the ball a million yards. It's quick decisions. It's accuracy. It's everything. He has to translate that what he does every day to a game day. I don't know if he will. I don't know if he will. I absolutely strongly believe he'll start the opener next year, because even if he is bad tomorrow, I don't think that's going to – I just think it's hard. These guys, I think, are hesitant to just throw Nico into the mix. So I think he's going to be the starter next year. But if he plays well tomorrow, then I think you can really see where momentum could build to where – next year, he could be good. They could be good. And the NFL people know all about Joe Milton. Trust me on that.
Well, you know, I'm reading through this piece right now. And there's a lot in here that people can check out at theathletic.com. But, I mean, you have talked to some draft people as to what the tools are and what the outlook is for Joe Milton. And, look, we'll have to see it. Like I said, he's got to get on the field. He's got to be the starter for Tennessee next year to get into all these conversations. But I know that you talked to Dane Brugler for this too, and it's pretty clear that I think most people recognize the ability that he brings to the table.
Yeah, look, it's just – and it's arm talent that, again, it's not just throw it far. It's arm talent where, like, you can – like, this is the way Joey Halsley explained it yesterday. He's like – you know, like from like 50 yards away, he can like just throw it to you like on a rope. Like, he can just, and that's been part of the problem his arm is so strong. And again, it's not just power, it's accuracy too. It's all of it. Like, he tries to just like hit guys 50 yards away. Most people, like, if your target's that far away, you have to loft it.
Yep.
He doesn't have to loft it. They've worked really hard on, and it's a lot of things. It's shoulder angle. I mean, so there's a lot of mechanical parts of it, but ultimately it comes down to mindset of you have to let receivers run under some balls more than just like, okay, here, I'm throwing it to you right now. Pew! But I mean, honestly, like, Halsley came short of saying he has a better arm than anybody in the NFL, but I think that's true. I think he has the best arm. I think he actually could have the best arm on the planet.
Number one overall pick, best arm on the planet, Joe Milton.
But, you know, so it's just, look, there's a lot to it. But I think what's interesting is so this stat is crazy that's in the story. So he threw 54 passes this year, okay? Yep. 54 on the entire season. He's 14th in the country with 6 completions of 50 or more.
Yeah.
Throwing 54 passes. So go back to especially a couple of them. You can't possibly throw a better deep ball with more better touch, and most quarterbacks couldn't even make the throws. Wouldn't even try to make the throws. So again,
he threw one against Missouri that I swear to you traveled 65 yards in the air and was right over the shoulder.
It was incredible. That's one of them. So I mean, look, and I think what people are missing is one, the other aspects have gotten a lot better. And that's one thing Halsley talked about. Really interesting stuff. Like, you know, in the portal, a lot of times he said, like, a lot of times guys are like, here I am, come take me. Okay, I'm ready to come play for you. Said with Hooker and Milton, they both were like, make me better, you know? And so that's part of why Joe Milton stayed, because he thinks these guys are good quarterback coaches and can make him better. But I think people are also missing, you know, this is another thing Halsley said yesterday. He's like, you know, Hendon Hooker Another reason Milton beat him, Alex, is Milton was immediately a team leader. They said that about him at Michigan too. They were like, this guy is like going to be an all-time great leader at Michigan. He didn't play well, and he got his thumb ligaments got torn. So whatever. I mean, you have to play well. He was the leader of the team last year, and Hendon Hooker is a quiet guy by nature. Now, eventually, Hooker played so well, took the job, and he got to be vocal. But he's like, I mean, Joe Milton is that guy and has been even as a backup. And now everybody's like, boom, Joe's the guy. He's our leader. And that's, I think that's something people are missing too, is the intangibles with him, the intelligence, the leadership, the voice, all of it. It's all great. But you have to throw the ball accurately. You have to play in games like you do in practices. And so far, it hasn't been good enough from him. But I do think that this year, if you're watching closely when he played, you saw a player who has improved quite a bit.
So, what do you make of the range that Joe Rexroad has thrown out there with Joe Milton? Could be the backup quarterback for Tennessee next year. Could be a first-round pick in the 2024 NFL draft. We'll begin to find out that answer tomorrow coming up at the Orange Bowl. Hit up our text line or phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We'll get more into that coming up next. Preds head coach John Hines coming up at 9:30. All that ahead, this is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Join Chase, Willie, and D-Mace today as they broadcast live from Almost Friday, located downtown at 415 4th Avenue South. The guys will be giving away a pair of tickets to see Luke Combs at Nissan Stadium. That's today from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Almost Friday downtown. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 The Game. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the Law Offices of Amanda J. Gentry. Taking your thoughts on Joe Milton and the Vols, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. I got a texture that says, I sure hope dude knows what the hell he's talking about, but Joe can sling it. I don't know if you're the dude he's referring to or somebody else.
I don't know. I saw someone else on the text line say Jamarcus Russell, what, 2.0?
Yeah.
I see that right?
Yeah,
Yeah.
Jamarcus Russell
Yeah.
2.0.
Andrew from Dover Milton or just Jamarcus Russell 2.0. He will be a bust too. I will say that on the Jamarcus Russell front, who Milton was talking yesterday about throwing the ball 70 yards from his knees. I'm like, don't tell people
No,
that.
don't say that.
Don't tell people that one. Because that was like, I still, this is to this day, Charles Robinson does not. He tries to deny this, but that I remember that day, and I remember Charles saying, "Dude, this guy's gonna be the greatest quarterback ever." He just threw it 7 yards at his knees, and I was like, "Who gives a crap?"
Don't expose
Charles
Charles like that. Come
jeez.
on, Joe.
Charles, no, man, no. He doesn't remember it that way. He needs to own up to it. That's exactly how it happened. But look, man. Milton, I mean, who knows? Will he be a bust? I mean, will he be a high draft pick? Will he be a draft pick? I am confident in this that he will be drafted. I mean, there's too much there for someone to not be interested to, in taking him somewhere. But if he plays well and wins and shows everything on a consistent basis next year, then yes, he's a high end of the draft quarterback. So it's going to be fascinating. I mean, if you're Tennessee, and you can set it up to where you got Hendon Hooker, who just had the best 2 year run at quarterback since Peyton Manning, multi year run at quarterback since Peyton Manning. Then you can have like a really good season out of Joe Milton and win and have a really good year. I mean, I have a hard time buying next year's Tennessee team right now as a playoff team, given the schedule, given the questions that are still there on defense. And I think the offensive line being rebuilt is a big deal. But, 9-10 win season potentially. Joe Milton, really good year. High draft pick again. All that does is help recruiting. And then you can get to Nico with that red shirt year or whatever year as a backup in 2024. And he's what you hope by then. That to me is the perfect timeline moving forward. But I know, Robbie, the next year. First time Joe Milton overthrows somebody, or they go three and out, or whatever. We want Nico. in the student section. I've seen it before. We want Nico. It's going to be that's going to be hard for him. And not really for the coach, but it's going to be hard for Joe, I think, that he has to be damn near perfect next year to avoid people talking like that. And no matter how much you try to close that off, you can't help but notice it. You can't help but, you know what people are saying.
Well, you've at least got to build up some equity, right? Like you got to play well early if you're Joe Milton to give yourself benefit of the doubt there in that discussion. Like, look, I watch him play this year, and like you said, he didn't play a ton. He got in there in some mop-up duty throughout the regular season, and then, of course, he started the last game against Vanderbilt, which, as you pointed out earlier this week, it was raining. It was, you know, a weather situation that will be different from tomorrow. I mean, right now I'm looking at the forecast tomorrow in Miami. It's going to be like 77 degrees and clear by the time the game kicks off. So the weather is not going to be a factor tomorrow for Joe Milton and this Tennessee offense. But I watch him play, and I think he checks a lot of the boxes beyond just the physical traits that he brings to the table. I think he makes good decisions. Like, I think he makes good decisions with the football. Very rarely is Joe Milton like throwing into traffic and throwing into triple coverage where the ball's going to get picked off. I think he makes good decisions. I think he's a good runner. I don't think he runs the same way that Hendon Hooker runs, but I think he's a good runner. I think he's got some power to him, and I think he's a little bit more elusive than he looks given the size that he brings to the table. And like I said, I think he operates the offense really well. Really, the one thing right now that's a problem with him is the overthrows. Like, that's the problem with Joe Milton right now, is when you have wide-open receivers streaking down the field, which you're going to have in this offense, you have to hit on those. And you don't have to be perfect on them. You know, Hendon Hooker missed some of those on occasions. But you got to hit a lot of them. You got to hit most of them going down the field that way. And to your point, he did that a lot this year. He did not do it much as the starter. He had the one big play to Hyatt basically to start the game off for Tennessee against Vanderbilt, and you're like, oh God, if he starts hitting those, he's going to throw for 700 yards, and then he missed a few of them after that. So as the starting quarterback, when you're the guy and you're playing the top defense, you know, not the backups that are out there, but you're playing against the top defense, all this other stuff, can you, when the bullets are live, hit those guys? That everything else I feel pretty good about with Joe Milton. Like, I think he's good on the intermediate routes. I think for the most part, he's a good decision maker. I think he runs the ball reasonably well. Can you put that last part of it together? Because if you can, then he obviously checks every box physically.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I totally agree. It's interesting, too. It's like that game, because, yeah, they hit the big one to Hyatt, and, it was a complete runaway because they just ran the ball at will on Vanderbilt. But at one point in that game, and I won't call this person out by name because I haven't asked for permission, but someone who covers Vanderbilt comes up to me and is like, God, he sucks. I mean, Nico's the starter next year, right? He sucks. He's terrible. And I'm like, he's missing these deep throws. I hear you. But he doesn't suck. He's not terrible. But some people, like believe that, you know? Like, and look, I understand, like, the Pittsburgh game was, like, almost comical, you know? Like, how many touchdowns were left on the field. And that's another point Joe Milt made in this piece. He's like, people also, you know, basically to paraphrase, like, you know, it was early. I didn't know the receivers as well. Some of this is also knowing who you're throwing to. Like Hyatt's a guy who hit that one to Hyatt, right? Well, you know, Hyatt is hard to overthrow. Squirrel, I think the one over the shoulder against Missouri was Squirrel Wire, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Well, and that's going to be one of his guys. But you got to know your personnel too. You got to be able to put air under it. You got to know your personnel. Look, it's all fair. It ultimately comes down to the game. And I think the whole thing next year, it comes down to game day. And I do think the thing with next year, I think you're right. He has to start well, but that's where I also think tomorrow is so important. You know, I think, look, man, I mean, the Tennessee fan base is so big and so powerful. It affects people. It affects people who coach the teams. It affects people who play on the teams. And I think that if he plays well in a win tomorrow, then there's a lot of equity built up from that aspect of it, you know, and it's important just to have a little bit of grace and leeway next year before they get to the big games. You know, look, at some point it may be that Nico is just the better option. That's what Halsey said yesterday. Like, look, I mean, every Saturday, like, who gives us the best chance to win? That's how we have to look at it. But I'd say the gap right now, if you're being realistic about what Joe Milton has done in this program, going into his third year in it, and a guy who just got there. It's big. It's a big gap.
So we'll get to predictions in the game tomorrow, but as you look at this matchup now, what sort of a chance do you think Tennessee has to win this game real quickly as John Hines joins us here in about 5 minutes?
Well, I think it comes down to Joe Milton.
Thank you.
You know, like everything in my life comes down to Joe Milton.
Yes,
Robbie.
It does.
Hoping to see him on the beach later, take some pictures. If he plays well, then I think they can outscore Clemson. You know, Clemson has a good defense, but I mean, this offense can absolutely light up the scoreboard against Clemson. And they're missing some guys too. The other side is both quarterbacks are super interesting because obviously the Klubnik era is beginning in Clemson. It's his show now. Tennessee doesn't have a ton of tape on him. When I've watched him play, he looks kind of like a true freshman. If you want to talk about Nico next year, you know, this guy now, if he plays really well in this game tomorrow, you see, obviously he played well in the ACC title game, but early on when he came in, part of the reason they went back to Uiagalelei is because he wasn't good. He looked like a freshman running around out there, just throwing wacky. He threw just an awful pick in the loss to, was it Notre Dame, right? Yeah, just awful. You know, he's a freshman. But Tennessee's defense, Byron Young playing, even though he's going to the NFL draft, can they affect him? That's how this defense is good. That's how they win games. When that pass rush really impacts a game, and that to me has got to be the key in this one, is getting after the freshman and rattling him a little bit.
Coming up next, we'll be joined by Predators head coach John Hines. Preds out west taking on Ducks tomorrow and then Vegas on Saturday. John Hines coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. The Preds back in action tomorrow night, taking on the Anaheim Ducks. I guess tomorrow afternoon is more accurate, at 4 o'clock local time here. And then they'll take on Vegas coming up on Saturday as well. So a back-to-back set coming up for the Predators. And to help us talk more about that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in Predators head coach John Hines. John, good morning. How are we doing?
I'm doing well. Good morning to you guys. Hope you guys had a good holiday and back at it now.
Hopefully you did as well. Appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning. So let's just start there, John. What's the challenge like as a coach with the way the rules are set up and the Christmas break of that first game back coming off the break there? And what did you make of the way your guys responded to that challenge?
Well, you know, the big challenge like that break and basically All-Star break is, you know, with the Players Association, how it's set up is that, you know, it's mandatory days off. So it really, really becomes incumbent upon the players to make sure that they're doing the right things, you know, on the break, whether that's, you know, taking time away from the game, doing some workouts, their nutrition. But you're really counting on them to be able to come back from these breaks, you know, physically and mentally rested, but also ready to perform, because it usually comes, you know, usually a quick morning skate and then you're playing the game that night. I didn't think we had a very good first period against Dallas. I thought they were the better team. We were better in the second period. And then I thought for parts of the third, we were okay. But I thought overall Dallas was I think they had the majority of the play in the game.
So as you head into break, do you give them like a don't eat too much like fruitcake over break speech, John?
Yeah, you know what? We try, but you never know what they're going to do. And it's, most of the guys, I think, do, you know, I think all of them are handle themselves pretty well, you know, but it's just some of them, I think some guys maybe need the break more than others, but that's one battle, though, Joe. I don't think I'm going to fight is somebody can't eat cake and cookies over Christmas.
Probably a smart call on
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's one I'm going to avoid that battle.
That's probably a good idea. So, John, taking on the Ducks tomorrow. Overall, right now at this point in the season, what do you make of your team, where they're at in the standings and just where their game is as you head into a lot of games coming up over the next few weeks?
Yeah, good question. I mean, we have to get more wins. I think that we collectively have really worked hard. I think over the last 3 weeks, we've done a better job, I think, helping generate some offense in different ways and staying with the guys and trying to teach them and show them where, you know, we had 4 3-on-2s, but there wasn't enough execution, or we could do this better or that better, and these are the looks we got to continue to capitalize. So I think that part of our game has been better. I think our defensive structure has been pretty good. Our penalty kill has come on as of late. You know, we still need, I think the power play again is showing some signs of life, but there's got to be much more consistency with our power play, whether it's executing or attacking or bringing the team momentum. So, you know, right now we're at 500 and we've got to be, you know, a lot better than 500 to get ourselves in the playoff picture. So all those components have to get better faster, and we need much more consistency with our team game and our individual games.
On the individual front, John, you know, Tanner Jeannot obviously hasn't scored in a while. What are you seeing from him right now? And have you thought at all about, because obviously the best hockey he's played in his very, you know, short, young career was with the Herd line, or whatever you want to call that line. Have you thought at all about reuniting them?
Yeah, you know, I think first, just regarding Tanner individually, I mean, you know, he's going through right now one of these spells where he gets good looks. Some of the tips and rebounds and chances he got last year went in the net. This year they're not going in the net. But he still brings an impact to the team that brings a strong competitive nature, a strong two-way player. You know, he's done a really nice job on the penalty kill. He has top 4 penalty kill minutes right now. So he's, you know, he's found his way to be an impact player, but the production, it isn't where he or we would like it, but it's not because of, you know, for him, I don't think it's because of a lack of effort or not getting to the scoring areas or not getting chances. It's, you know, for whatever reason, it's not going in for him right at this point. And, you know, our lineup is a little bit different this year, obviously, with Glass kind of coming in and playing well and Novak's in there in the middle. And then you also have what else I got down the middle there? And Juuso Parsinen. So, you know, you have 3 young centermen. So we have thought about putting those guys back together. But I also think that Tanner's done a really good job, I think, with Glass and Niederreiter. That's been probably one of our, you know, more productive, more chance generating lines over the last couple weeks. And he's been on that line and it has been a big part of it.
Well, John, you had some interesting comments last week after the Edmonton game just about Cody Glass and his journey to be able to now handle the role that you guys have asked him to play. What do you make of his continued response in that role since then and exactly the growth that you've seen from him so far this year?
You know, it's what we were hoping for. And had talked with him earlier in the year. You know, he had a good training camp, and then I think you guys saw the emotion. I think when he made the team, how excited he was for that, and he played some really good hockey in the beginning. And you know, because of his play, we said, okay, let's bump him up and see if he can play in the top 6 role. And I think at that point in time for him, it was a little bit much playing, you know, with that type of. The type of players you have to play with, the type of players you have to play against night in and night out. Didn't handle it as well. A little bit of a reset. He's come back. He's played better. Okay, let's try it again. And he's gone in and he's done a really good job. And the thing that, to me, that's been nice to see with him is, as you said, the consistency level. He's a good skater. He's got good size. He's got great hockey sense. He can turn plays. I think he's done a better job in the faceoff circle. And he's showing from a, I think, a hockey sense, a skating and a competitiveness and the ability to handle some minutes against top players, that's an encouraging sign.
John, where is UC Saros right now? I mean, maybe relative to some of the better stretches you've seen from him since you've been the coach here.
I mean, he's at the top of his game right now. I think the thing that I'm not, really ever since I've been here, he's been, you know, really solid. He's had some really good, really strong stretches, as you said, Joe. I'd say right now he's playing at the top of his game. He's given us a chance to win every night. Got to give him more run support. You know, we got to get some more goals on the board when he has some of the performances that he has. But that's something that we know. Like, we knew coming into the year that, you know, our goaltending was going to be a real solid area of our team, and it has been. And now there's other areas. You know, we were expecting our power play and are expecting our power play to be, you know, last year we were a top five unit. This year, you know, we're not close to that right now, and that's a big difference too. When you get good goaltending, you get 1 or 2 5-on-5 goals and a power play goal, you know, it's a pretty good recipe to win, and I think that's something we got to get back to, or it's something we are working to get back to.
Predators head coach John Hines with us here on Robbie and Rex Show. So, John, to that point, you know, be it with guys like Tanner Janot or Philip Forsberg, Matt Duchene, whoever you want to throw in there, guys that you know have produced offensively before in their careers, and you're trying to get more consistency out of them right now. As a coach, as a coaching staff, just kind of take us behind the scenes and what goes into working on that and trying to get more out of those guys on a daily basis with the video work, the practice work, everything that goes into it.
Yeah, you know, if you start with the individual, you know, a lot of times it's, you know, you have their shifts, and we'll break them down. And I think, the big thing with those guys, those offensive players, is sometimes as a coach you'll watch it and you can sit down with them and say, hey, here's 3 or 4 opportunities where if this play was made, or next time you look at this one, or the execution was better, you know, there's probably going to be some better production. Or, you know, instead of when the puck goes east-west in the offensive zone, instead of going behind the net, if you take your route above the net and now the shot comes, you're automatically in position, say for a tip or a rebound or a screen. Or it could be a situation on a line rush where the defensemen don't have good gap and, you know, maybe a guy kind of puts the puck in behind them where there's a play to be made off the rush. So I think when guys struggle a little bit offensively, it's, you know, you have to stay with them, but you have to also coach them offensively. Like, these are some looks, these are some opportunities that are there. So sometimes when it goes in, you know, the puck goes in and out, it's easy for guys, but when it's not, I think you have to continually talk to them about it, show them, get their feedback on what they see, but show them the potential chances that they had in addition to the actual chances that they got in the game. And then from a practice standpoint, when we get out there, you know, we've worked a ton on, you know, you're showing those guys things in the video, and then you want to pair that up when you get into practice. So if you're talking about breakouts and getting out of your zone fast, we go out and practice that quite a bit. And then attacking off the rush, here's opportunities, 2-on-1s, 3-on-2s. You work on your power play quite a bit in different ways. It could be full ice, it could be 5-on-4, it could be 5-on-3, it could be small games where they're under heavy pressure in tight areas where they got to make real quick decisions offensively. So, you know, that's part of coaching, is working with them individually and trying to put them in situations in practice when you can that they can execute the things that, you know, we feel are going to give us the best chance to win. And then I also think it's staying connected with them to make sure that, you know, their confidence and the potential more opportunities that they can generate offense, they see those things regularly.
And then, John, just what about just the big picture of the standings and where you guys are? It's still a ton of hockey, 49 games left. Like, do you get into messaging at all about, you know, look, we gotta go on a run, or we, you know, or do you just, is it purely this is Anaheim's next, and we just have to keep it to that day-to-day mindset?
No, you know, I mean, you do focus, Joe, for sure on the upcoming game, because it is so many games. But, you know, we do chunk things in segments, 20-game segments, 10-game segments. And, you know, now you start to get in the year where we'll probably say, okay, in this 10-game segment, you know, we got to get this point percentage to, you know, so you don't go 49 games. You basically break it down to maybe 10 games. Sometimes we do 7-game segments, like it's a playoff series. Like, okay, we got to get 5 wins this segment, or we got to get this many points in this segment to give ourselves the best. Here's where our points percentage is. Probably need, what, 98 to get in. So what do we have to do in this segment right now to give ourselves those? So you chunk it in small areas. So it's not this huge focal point of you know, it's 49 games and we have to do this. It's, hey, here's the big picture. Here's where we sit. Here's where we need to get to. This is what we need to focus on now. Let's chunk it into a short segment and then go from there.
Well, John, good luck tomorrow night coming up against Anaheim. Appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays to you and your family, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, guys. It was great talking with you, and Happy New Year.
Absolutely. Predators head coach John Hines, our guest here on Robbie and Rexroad. We'll take your thoughts, 615-737-1025. Give our final predictions and final thoughts on the Titans and the Cowboys coming up next as well. But first, Michelle Knezovic has a word from Superbook Sportsbook.
Yes, I do, Robbie. And to preview our picks for this game tonight, I'm going to give you mine a little early because it's presented by Superbook Sports. Listen, the line has moved up to 13 points in favor of the Cowboys. It was 9.5 yesterday, but after they saw all those Tennessee Titans players ruled out, they moved the line up to 13. I'm going to take the Dallas Cowboys minus the 13. I think they win by about 2 touchdowns. And listen, Superbook is going to help you add to your New Year's resolutions, win money in 2023. Who doesn't love winning some money with Superbook Sports? Superbook has over 3 decades of sports wagering experience in Las Vegas, so you'll get the best odds anywhere as we head into the football playoffs. Plus, check out the special odds boosts and promotions at Superbook.com. Make 2023 the year when you win money from Vegas. So download the Superbook Sportsbook app today and place your bets. Visit Superbook.com for terms and conditions. Gambling problem? Call
1-800-889-9789. Check out Nashville's best deals and get half-off gift cards for Old School Pizza, Nashville B-Cycle, and more. Visit thegamenashville.com/deals while supplies last. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexroad, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Thursday morning. It's time to make some picks for the Titans and the Cowboys coming up tonight. These will count for our Pigskin Pick'em standings, which we'll have an update on that tomorrow. I will give you a quick preview. Shout out to Arkansas yesterday, who I had -3 going into that game, who was up by a billion points and then decided to choke it all away and then win by 2 in overtime. Really appreciated that from Sam Pittman and company yesterday. Really loved it.
Woo pig.
Woo pig.
Great stuff there yesterday. So, Michelle, we begin with you, and we're going to go with the FanDuel Sportsbook line on this one, which is at 12.5 right now. So, Michelle, I think I know where you're going, but the Titans and the Cowboys, Cowboys favored by 12.5.
Yeah, you guys heard me tease it a little bit before the break here, but I truly do not have faith that this Tennessee Titans team will have much offense, considering they don't have much offense when their starters are in. So I am going to take the Cowboys plus the 12.5. I think that they will end up winning by about 2 touchdowns. So yeah, give me the Cowboys plus the 12.5. Or minus the 12.5, I'm sorry.
I know what you meant. I'm going to go to the Cowboys too, and I'm locking down on it. This is my lock. Lock it down on the Cowboys. It's going to be amazing. This is quite the roster that the Titans are putting out there tonight. And I don't see it. I don't see a path for the Titans, especially if Derrick Henry won't play, which it looks like he's not going to. That's going to be a tough one to overcome for the Titans. So I will go with the Cowboys minus the 12.5. Joe Rexroad, the Titans. Thank you. The Titans and the Cowboys minus the 12.5.
Titans. Give me the Titans. And I would make it my lock, except that I, of course, have to lock the Lions choking against the Bears.
Yes.
On Sunday. I mean, that's like my mandatory lock. But, yeah, give me the Titans. I think the Titans, they're going to get, like, a little swing pass to Traylon Burks, and he's going to go 60 yards with it. DeMarcus Walker's going to strip sack Dak Prescott, and Jack Gibbons is going to return it, like, 35 yards for a touchdown. They're going to run a fake punt or a block punt or some crap like that. And this is going to be one of those shocking games that comes down to the end. I don't know that the Titans are going to win in the end because you still have to, like, you know, execute some offense.
Take them on the money line, Rexroad. You won't.
Yeah.
Nah. But I feel great about taking the Titans at that many points. Give me the 12.5.
I like it. I like the boldness there from Rexroad. Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com and welcome in Doug from Florida. Doug, thanks for calling in.
Yeah, good day, everyone. Just a general concern about the Tennessee Titans. Is Derrick Henry playing tonight?
Does not look like he will be.
Well, that's going to be that's gonna be a nightmare. I mean, if he's not playing, but anyway, I think Derrick Henry, something going on with Derrick Henry when it comes to the whole situation with the Tennessee Titans, because I've been watching Derrick Henry. I've been a Tennessee Titans fan from the time they come from Houston, and Derrick Henry, it seemed like every game he played now, he fumbled the ball. Derrick Henry used to run with the ball in one hand, and he pushed it down with the other hand. All the games that Derrick Henry played now, he's fumbling the ball. I don't know if anything with AJ Brown and this and that and something better in Derrick Henry and he's ready to leave, but that don't look like the Derrick Henry I know.
Hey, thanks for the call, Doug. I enjoyed the background.
The background music.
From Doug on the phone line there. I mean, it is something to watch in that Jacksonville game. Got to hold on the ball if you're Derrick Henry. I mean, tonight it's probably going to be the Hassan Haskins / Julius Chestnut show, if I had to guess. So those guys got to hold on the ball too. But more fumbles than we've grown accustomed to seeing from Derrick Henry, especially of late.
Yeah, it's stunning to see because it just has never been a thing. It's like among all the things that these pinky push-ups on an inverted hill full of nails have done is like – you can't tackle the guy. He's impossibly fast and strong. And, like, there's no way in hell you're getting the ball out of his hands when he has a grip on it, right? I mean, he never fumbled. So I think a couple of those plays have just been timed up where, like, you're turning and, like, it's right when the hit on the ball comes. But you can't tell me that hasn't happened before with no impact. So it's a concern, and he knows it. And, look, I think they win the Houston game. And we're probably looking at a different situation. Probably really the same situation because it was still going to go to the end because Jacksonville's not losing to Houston. But
they already have one.
You still have it. Nah, I know. That was a different time. That was before the era of Duval greatness that we're now in. But that fumble against Houston changed the game. And frankly, the fumble against Jacksonville changed the game also.
Joe, I said this earlier, and I stand by it. If the Titans pull this off tonight, it is the ultimate of the Vrabel specials that we've come to see and come to discuss. Do you agree or disagree with that take?
Yeah. The thing is, though, it's like let's say they do that and they go lose at Jacksonville.
Yeah,
it's
that
the
would
most
not
worthless
be
Vrabel. It's the most worthless Vrabel special ever. You know, like it means nothing. But yes, just in terms of, yeah, I would say so. I mean, I think the obvious when you have Gabbert. And your top three tackles, you have Mariota out and your top three tackles out in that game against Houston. And Delanie Walker just broke his leg on and on and on. Like, that was hopeless. Because at that time, the Texans were great.
Oh, yeah.
Sean Watson, loaded defense, all those guys, you know, Watt and Clowney. And I mean, that was insane. But considering what Malik Willis has been at quarterback and the offensive line he's behind, which is absolutely worse than the offensive line they put out on the field that day in 2018. Yeah, this would be an all-timer.
Well, I was going to say, like, the
to actually win it.
I know we're talking about Blaine Gabbert, but that version of Blaine Gabbert is better than Malik Willis right now.
Oh, way better. That was, you know, that was a year where the Titans they upgraded a backup quarterback, and he almost won them the win and end game in the Sunday night flex game against the Colts. I mean, he also threw a terrible pick to make sure they didn't win it, but yes, totally different. Version of QB, him versus Willis right now.
Really interested to see what happens from the Titans standpoint tonight. We'll be back here in the morning to discuss it all. My eyes going to be on Malik Willis tonight. How does he play? Is there any progress on that front there? Can you generate anything offensively against that defense with the roster that the Titans are going to be trotting out there without Derrick Henry? Really interested to see how that goes. Joe, enjoy yourself in Florida. You'll be down there again for the Orange Bowl tomorrow. Looking forward to a big day of sports talk back here tomorrow morning.
Yep, and if I can get some pictures with Joe M today, I'll share them. On the. And thank you for the nice illustration, by the way.
Yes.
Greg.
Yes.
Lovely. Just beautiful.
Anything you get with Joe Milton, please tweet it out. 615-737-1025. Chase, Willie, and D-Mace will have you covered all show long. Looking ahead to the Titans and the Cowboys coming up tonight. That does it for us today here on Robbie and Rex Road. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3, The Game.